This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Kent Backus. Kent is Senior Director of International Trade with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, NCBA. Kent, great to see you.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Okay, let's start with this. I think the last time you and I talked about trade, it was a different administration, and we were talking about maybe a trade agreement with UK or trade agreement with the EU or maybe an African country in there. Is any of this still in play?
Well, you know, with this new administration, the Biden administration came in and said, we want to review everything that the United States has been engaged in. We want to look at all of the trade agreements that have been implemented and see if there's any changes that need to be made. And so, you know, the momentum that we had kind of moving forward, I would say that it hasn't necessarily stalled, but it's definitely slowed down. And so as opposed to just continuing to open market after market like we saw in the previous administration, this is going to be more consensus building and getting everybody on board before we actually engage in further negotiations. But that doesn't mean that we're not going to see negotiations with the United Kingdom or with Kenya or other, you know, country-specific markets, but we may see more opportunities to engage in the multilateral approach. That includes working with G7 countries. It also means, you know, potentially being able to engage as part of the Comprehensive and Progressive Trans-Pacific Partnership. But, you know, it's still kind of uncertain what the path forward is going to be for this administration. We've seen them come out recently and talk about the need to restore trade adjustment assistance. And, you know, that's kind of the playbook for some of the old school Democrat approach to trade is first we want to talk about workers and how to compensate them if they've been displaced by jobs. Then we want to talk about the agreements themselves. So maybe this is a sign that the Biden administration is starting to come forward and look at these opportunities. But, you know, the fact remains, all of our trade partners continue to negotiate these agreements, and we have to step up. We have to engage, and the United States needs to lead. And we have a great opportunity. At NCBA, we think that the priority should be given to the United Kingdom to really try to open that market. We see a lot of potential there. We see a chance to discuss science-based trade and set some very good standards. And then from there, we can proceed. But it's still a little uncertain as to what the plan for the Biden administration will be. But NCBA is going to engage in every step of the way.
So in order to negotiate these, you really have to have some leadership. And we had about figured out where the previous administration and how they would negotiate with Bob Lighthizer. Now you've got Katherine Tai, and she's not an unknown. You've seen her over in Ways and Means before. Set the stage for Katherine Tai leading the USTR.
So, you know, Katherine Tai is, let's just be honest, she is the smartest person in the room. She is very sharp, very agile. And, you know, a lot of people, sometimes they may mistake her kindness as weakness, and that's to their own errors. She is definitely going to be an intense negotiator. I think that some of the comments she made this week with the Europeans, I think it was very encouraging to kind of put them on notice that the United States is not going to bend, that we're definitely willing to talk with them, to meet with them, but we're not above, you know, using tariffs as needed. So I think we're going to see a very strong push. We're going to see a different style of leadership from USTR. But, you know, she is very well respected. She's proven, and we're very excited to have her at the negotiating table on behalf of the U.S. cattle industry.
And sometimes you need the ability, and I can't think of anything but the cliche, good cop, bad cop kind of an analogy of how you can negotiate. And in the past, you've had Darcy Vedder, you've had Greg Dowd. Do we have any direction as far as where that ag negotiator's going to come from? And do we know where we're going?
Well, Tony, I think I heard your name mentioned a few times. No, I'm just kidding. But there's a lot of, water cooler talk right now. It's basically rumors. There are plenty of qualified people who are willing to step up and engage. But keep in mind, we were negotiating the USMCA without a chief ag negotiator. It took several months, almost a year to get Greg Dowd confirmed. And that's just the unfortunate side of politics. Now, I think it's important the Biden administration start putting forward those nominees pretty soon so that we can engage and try to get them confirmed, because it's important that we have people there specifically negotiating for agriculture. Catherine Tai is going to have a lot on her plate. She's going to need someone there at her right hand that can take that lead for agriculture. And we feel, very confident that there's a lot of qualified people across the aisle and with bipartisan support that are going to be able to do that. But so far there hasn't been a specific name mentioned. I think for the qualifications, we definitely want someone who has the experience, who has worked with Congress, who's worked with the administration, who's worked in business, and who understands the needs of the industry and also understands all of the important points it takes to be a good negotiator. That's a key position, somebody that, we desperately need, and we look forward to seeing that position confirmed, hopefully, in the next few months.
So we talk about free trade agreements and mentioned Ways and Means earlier. They're the ones who really guide, if you will, that trade negotiation with oversight, Senate side, I believe it's Finance Committee. And I mention all that to say, because one agreement that was negotiated that didn't necessarily involve Congress was one with China, that phase one trade deal. We're halfway through. Well, we're more than halfway through that one. It's set to end next February. So the question is, where are we going with China? And have we been happy with where we've come to at this point?
As far as the cattle and beef sector is concerned, we're ecstatic of what we're seeing in China. The phase one agreement with China, it opened up access to a fifth of the world's population that, quite frankly, we just didn't have access to before. You're talking about a country that wants more protein. They're having a lot of problems with African swine fever right now. That's created a major vacuum and a lot of opportunity to meet protein demand. And consumers are starting to buy more beef. For the phase one agreement, we saw the hormone ban removed. We saw the BSE restrictions lifted. We saw a lot of other good terms that were implemented. So for us, we've been able to ride that wave and capitalize on that demand. And because of that, we've seen about a 1,500% increase over last year. And honestly, I think there's a very good chance that China will be a top three market for us for 2021, and possibly the top export market for us in 2022.
And since we're talking export markets, you've got to throw in some other countries that maybe sometimes we don't think of as being huge countries, but ones like Philippines.
With Philippines, there's some opportunity there. They're also having a lot of problems filling protein demand. They're buying record amounts of pork. They've waived a lot of restrictions on the tariff side that they've had before. I think for beef, we do need to develop that market. We do need to secure some good terms. But the Philippines is just one example. Taiwan, we continue to have a tremendous growth in our sales there. When you look at Korea is now our biggest export market. It has surpassed Japan by about $300 million. But, those two countries are chasing each other for that number one position. I think at the end of this year, we're going to see at least four of our five top export markets be in Asia. And it's just a tremendous demand over there and a great opportunity for U.S. beef exports.
There might be some who are a little concerned because we're looking at beef imports as well coming in. Why should they not be concerned about the beef that we're exporting because we could be consuming it here? That thought line, why is that maybe a failed thought?
Well, I think there's a misunderstanding there because, what we export is very different from what we import. We're exporting tongues. We're exporting short ribs, short plates, a lot of things that, that Americans aren't looking for when they go to the grocery store or even when they go to restaurants. Now, I'm a consumer that actually likes those things, so I'm a little disappointed to see how expensive they could be. But I know that the prices that we can fetch for those cuts in Asia and in Latin America are much, much higher than what we can get here in the domestic market. But on imports, I think it's important to realize that, you know, only 11% of the beef that is consumed in the United States is from an imported source. And of that 11%, 72% of it, it comes in the form of lean beef trimmings. Now, that all goes into make ground beef. And I know there are people out there that raise grass-finished cattle. They say, well, we have lean beef. But the truth of the matter is, we primarily produce grain-finished beef. That's what our system is designed to do because that's what American consumers really want. And in order for us to meet that ground beef demand, we would have to stop producing for that grain-finished market. And you know, and at that point, we're trading ribeyes for ground beef. Well, you talk to our producers, they're going to make more money selling those muscle cuts than their trimmings. So we're actually able to take a value add, or make a value added product with those imports. And so I just think it's important that we understand, you know, the true relationship there. Plus, you have to keep in mind, for a country to gain any access to the United States, they have to go through rigorous audit and review process through USDA, and that takes years to accomplish. So I think it's important we understand all the facts. And the truth is, we dominate the American market. Most of our beef is going to be consumed here. And the value add we get from those exports really drives value for our cattle.
Well, and it leads right into the final question, product of the USA. We've seen it in the meat counter now for years. Why do we maybe need to look closer at having those labels in the meat counter?
Well, you know, NCBA for the last few years has been investigating these concerns of our producers. They're saying, look, we're seeing this product of the USA label, but what is this? And can this potentially apply to imported product? And so we investigated all of those claims. We looked for examples of those labels. We found many different versions of it in retail markets all across the United States. And then our producers brought forward policy and said, okay, look, we need to make sure that there's transparency. We need to make sure that these claims are certified. And so from that, you know, we have been working with attorneys and working with FSIS to try to identify some solutions. NCBA recently filed a petition with the Food Safety Inspection Service to actually remove that product of the USA label and replace it with processed in the USA. Now, this would apply to beef, because as it is now, any beef product that can that passes through an FSIS inspected facility can carry that product of the USA label, which means that an imported product or anything else could have that. And so we think that it's time to clarify what's actually happened with that product. And the simple fact is it's processed. Now, retailers are probably not going to like that, because it's kind of nice for them to be able to market, you know, or at least imply that this is from an animal that's, you know, spent its entire life in the United States. But rather than go back and kind of crack down on the product of the USA label itself and bring back a lot of elements of mandatory country of origin labeling and potentially trigger a trade war, we decided, okay, let's get rid of that label altogether and let's use a process in the USA label instead. But it's a two-step process. The first thing is we have to get rid of that label. The second part is we need the Agricultural Marketing Service to work with producers and with retailers to talk about some of these process verified programs so that we can actually make sure that the claims that are going to be put on any package of beef are verified. And in order to do that, they're going to need to compensate producers. So we see this as a trade compliant solution. You know, that's something that Secretary Vilsack asked for. And we're trying to do the prudent thing and address these concerns, but also make necessary changes. So over the next few weeks, FSIS is going to receive comments on our petition, and then they'll decide, you know, where to go from there. But this is going to be an ongoing issue that NCBA is going to lead on. And we're going to make sure that, you know, the voice of our producers is heard. And we also want to make sure that we have the best available options so that we can capture any of that demand for those origin source labels.
Great to see you. Wish you the best. Come back and see us.
All right. Thank you very much.
It's Kent Backus, Senior Director of International Trade with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, on today's Agribusiness Report.